call has been forwarded to an automatic voice message system. At the tone, please record your message. When you have finished recording, you may hang up or press 1 for more options.
How much you want to bet LaMarcus Aldridge ends up on the Celtics? If this was, I don't know, 2018, 2015, I'd be fucking stoked. But honestly, he makes $24 million. We got the exception is for $28 million. I mean, if nothing else, you get LaMarcus, who could make an impact in the East, even a diminished DeMarcus, or LaMarcus. Jesus, I'm exhausted. Yeah, I guess we could have, with the $28 million, spend 24 of it on LaMarcus and the balance on DeMarcus to pair with our Marcus. It could be good.
I'm starting to think that the Celtics season is destined to be bad.
You know what? As a sports radio caller, like 25 years ago, said about what was probably a terrible Red Sox team, they're going to win 8 in a row, and they're going to get right back in the race. I think I might be back on the bandwagon. I'm hearing Aaron Gordon. Aaron Gordon! You excited?
You know, you're the second person to mention Aaron Gordon to me in like 12 hours, and maybe I was expecting like some NBA hoops rumors to be popping through on Daniel Tiger's Neighborhood. I didn't see the ticker across the PBS Kids app, so I'm unsure. But I don't know if getting Aaron Gordon, if that solves any of the problems that inherent, like, I just feel like that you'd have to give up some things that you're counting on in order to bring in Aaron Gordon to have him solve any of the problems you're looking for him to solve. You know, I mean, unless they can get away with being like, here's Semi Ojeleye, Carson Edwards, Daniel Tice, and a, you know, 2022 second rounder. Does bringing in Aaron Gordon, does that solve anything? I mean, I got to feel like if they're going to ask for Marcus Smart back, that's no good. Yeah. I think you need Smart because you need some, yeah, coats. That's your coat. And that's Daddy's coat. And we're having crackers. Yeah, I think so. And I think it would be crackers for the Celtics to get Aaron Gordon if they have to ship out pieces that make them the Celtics. I'm not saying he wouldn't be an upgrade in certain areas. I'm sure he would. And, like, you know, but I just don't know what they're going to have to give up to get him. So. I don't know. I'm interested in Evan Fournier. And I'm interested in some other tiny little moves. And then I think it's time to take a giant-ass swing at Carolina defense in the offseason. That's what I think.
Ah, shit. Okay, all right. Okay.
Patrick, can I talk to you about the NBA?
I wish you would.
I've been dying to talk to you about the NBA all day.
At first, I didn't know what you were referencing, but now I'm all in.
So I start marching my way down to Carol and HR, and I knock on her door and I say, Carol!
Let's get Carol from HR down here.
Moderate. No, Carol in HR.
Get her down here to moderate this conversation. It's been a goddamn ghost town.
This office is a goddamn ghost town.
On the Over 30 League Spotify feed, if you've been checking lately, because We have not had the time. If you've been watching any of the NCAA tournament, Patrick,
I have not.
All right, see,
I filled out a bracket. Yeah, I filled out a bracket basically based on logos, and I busted. Yes. By the middle of round two, I was out.
If you like UCLA's logo, though, you're probably doing pretty good because they are in the Final Four, expected to be. But I've watched a little bit of March Madness at night. Once the kids mercifully go to sleep, and there's this commercial that comes on, seems like all the time when you're on the stream, and it's like the song, I got the brains, you got the time, let's make lots of money. And I'm just like, you know what? We have neither had the brains nor the time. We certainly do not have the money, but we are here again for Over 30 League to discuss a myriad of things. First of all, I want to catch up with you because I don't even know that we've had like a full conversation rather than just like a text burst or a voicemail here and there. What is going on in your life?
It's been tumultuous, I would say.
Oh, boy.
There's been a lot going on. So I've been in the middle of looking for a new job.
Yeah.
I love the place where I'm at. It's where I met a good buddy of ours. Mm-hmm. And it's been a lot of fun, but you know, the kid is looking to stretch his wings. So it's, that's what has been taking up the majority of my time. Mm. So yesterday, D-Day is yesterday, you know, like, so I've got to do a big presentation. This is basically my final interview. I've interviewed with 10 different people at this place.
Holy cow.
Granted, it's been for two different roles.
That's thorough.
Yeah. Thorough. But it's been a lot of fun kind of going through this, like testing my mettle, seeing if I could still get the shots up. And yesterday was the final thing. So I'm all jazzed up. I'm like, yeah, I'm going to spend the morning. I've already taken the day off. I'm going to spend the morning getting everything ready and be ready to go right at 3 o'clock and blow their socks off. This is going to be great. So then I'm up, I'm banging away. And immediately upon waking up, my dog starts vomiting and pooping everywhere.
Oh,
so nice. Multiple times, like it was happening so frequent. I couldn't just hand wave it to be like, I'm sure she'll be fine.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It was like, that is not the consistency of health. And I don't think that is what it's supposed to look like.
No.
So took her for a walk. Problem continues. It's about 9:15. My mother-in-law mercifully is here and she's watching the baby. So that's good. So that's one thing off my plate.
Yep.
And I call the vet and they're like, you got to bring her in right now. I'm like, why? And they're like, it's because it sounds bad. What you're telling us, you have to bring the dog in here. And I'm like, okay. So I go to the vet and they're like, oh, we're booked solid until Tuesday. You didn't mean here. And I was like, what do you mean? And they're like, you have to take her to the ER. I'm like, all right, where's that? And they're like, next door. I'm like, okay, God.
Sure, yes.
The time is ticking here.
Next door.
I have left myself with like a 6-hour window to do 60% of this presentation. Mm-hmm. I've written it all out, mm-hmm. but I've got to put it into slides. So that's what I'm going to do. Like an idiot thinking that, like, yeah, I can write 20 pages the day before my thesis is due. That's fine.
Who doesn't think that they can accomplish that? Come on. I mean, that's the American way. We can, right. We can crack it all together at the last minute. Everything will be fine.
Just an absolute dumb move. And that's what I did. So I'm at the vet ER with the dog and they're like, okay, we're going to do X, Y, and Z, take her for X-rays, do all these things. And I'm like, all right. So I emailed the place I'm interviewing at to say, hey, I'm at the vet ER right now. Might need to push. I just want to give you the heads up, hoping to still make it to 3. And I'm like, okay, if you have to push, it's going to have to be till next week because we're out of the office. Mm. And I'm like, I got to get this done. I've been interviewing at this place for 5 weeks. I need closure on this part of my life.
Yeah.
You know? So I'm like, okay, that's what we'll do. I'm going to make it. Talk to the vet. They're like, yeah, you should be out of here in about 45 minutes. I'm like, okay, cool. That gets me back at like 11:30, plenty of time to get all the stuff done,
yep.
I think. So they come out. They're like, okay, she's dehydrated. So we got to like rehydrate her. I'm like, okay, well, I give her water. Like, what's going on? They're like, yeah, but you know, sometimes they don't do X, Y, and Z. We got to like basically rehydrate this dog. So we're going to keep her here until 6 o'clock. I'm like, okay. So she's at the vet. They hand me the bill. It's $1,500. And I'm like, okay.
For water.
For water. So $1,500, money well spent because the dog is A-okay. So, and
great.
Hopefully my pet insurance covers it. Hopefully we'll see.
You have pet insurance.
I do. Yeah. I've got pet insurance exactly for reasons like this.
Yep.
You know, so if Nationwide wants to jump on and sponsor this podcast, then hey, we've got a story built in.
Yeah, this would be the time for me to edit the commercial break in, right? Right here, Nationwide Insurance.
Right here. So no free ads. We wind up going, screw home, absolutely. I jump in my car, fly back here.
Yeah.
My wife mercifully has come home. She took a half day at school and she's a teacher. And she was like, I'll be here to help with the dog. I get home, no dog. So she's like, where's the dog? I'm like, oh, they kept her over there. She's like, okay, you got to go shower and get ready for this interview. I'm like, I have to build the presentation first. So I come in here, I'm banging it out. Get everything done. Jump into the shower. Get all cleaned up. Presentation Zoom ready. I'm back in front of the computer and like literally editing it until the minute the thing goes live.
Of course.
And like put the presentation up and like deliver, like speak for essentially an hour. And then close that out. Immediately get up. Rip off my sales costume, back into my dog dad outfit, run back to the vet to pick her up. They're like, yeah, she's fine, this, that, the other thing. Get back in the car, come home, and then like stop. I walk into the house and my wife goes, are you okay? Because like I was just radiating just absolute edge, straight edge. You think you know me, straight edge. And
Red Patrick.
Yesterday was truly challenging. So we'll find out hopefully tomorrow.
Okay.
If I wind up landing this gig. Or if they also thought, I'm like, Jesus, this guy is way too intense. This guy looks like he's made out of glass. So we can't move forward. So we'll find out tomorrow, hopefully. And yeah, so that's where I've been for the past couple of weeks.
Whew, man, I was going to say I threw my back out, but by comparison,
I wish I threw my back out.
All right. Well, best of luck to you with that.
Thank you.
And to maybe.
Yes, she's doing good. She's sleeping right next to me right now. So that's good. She's doing great. Right.
So here's what I want to do. I want to do in tribute to the great number six of the Boston Celtics, Bill Russell. Want to do a six pack of not trades necessarily, but moves that we've seen in the last couple of weeks, last few weeks here in the NBA. Kind of talk about what they mean to the league, what they mean to the teams that made them, and any future forecasting that we want to do as well. One of the things that came out of this trade deadline, I guess there were the most moves of any trade deadline, like individual moves of any trade deadline in NBA history. And wow. Yet it felt busy, but it also kind of like didn't feel like that. Like there were some guys who got moved, but obviously the biggest fish in James Harden moved months ago. So, I mean, what were your expectations going into the deadline? Did you expect it to be crazy? Do you expect it, and from the Celtics perspective, like, did you think there was going to be more? Did you think that it was going to be less? I mean, they at least did something.
Okay, I've got a lot of thoughts. Yes. We can unpack them slow.
Let's unpack.
I think that the way to truly enjoy the NBA is it's the fandom culture in the NBA is so closely related to fandom culture to things like Marvel movies or Marvel content in general. I don't know if you got on the WandaVision bandwagon or checked that out or followed that along at all.
Not but there yet. Currently rewatching every Marvel movie that's been made in order.
Nice.
What it's a are you project up to? At this house? My wife's on maternity leave, so I just kind of pop in and out of the room while she's doing it. I don't know where she is right now. All I know is I watched something the other day. There were some superheroes in it. I think it was one of the Iron Mans.
Cool. Okay. The Captain Americas are my favorite, so make sure you
block out
some time to consume content.
Give me your take here.
I think the fandom culture around things like WandaVision or anything Marvel is that there people are expecting and talk themselves into this fervor of all the things that could happen, even if they don't make sense for the story overall. Yep. They just want what they want right now. And then the way Twitter and social media works is it like movements and momentum build behind this thing with no context. And then if it doesn't deliver, everyone like points and is ready to shame this thing that they quote unquote love. Right. It reminds me of a couple of years ago, Tyler, the Creator, threw a festival on like campgrounds or whatever. And there was a rumor going around that Frank Ocean was like the surprise headliner. Do you remember this?
No, I don't. I remember that he had a festival. I mean, yeah. we're very much in a festival era, you know, of American music going until COVID hit.
Right. It'll be back, I'm sure. We'll be too old to go, but it will return.
Damn.
So anyway, there's a surprise headliner. It's going around the crowd that it's Frank Ocean. So everyone's excited to see Frank Ocean.
Yeah.
But you know who comes out and performs as a surprise headliner? Drake.
Smash Mouth.
At this moment.
No, sorry.
At this moment, Drake is like the biggest music artist on the planet.
Yeah.
He gets booed at this festival because he's not Frank Ocean. Oh, a person that was not going to be there. It was rumored that he was there. But it's not like he dropped out and they had Drake fill in. He was never going to be there. But everyone was like upset. And there was, so that's a lot of what like the Marvel fandom is. I'm sorry there were no mutants, or they didn't debut the X-Men in WandaVision. Spoiler alert. They didn't debut the X-Men in WandaVision. And people were upset about that. It's because just because you expect something or talk yourself into something doesn't mean it's going to happen. And that doesn't mean you should be upset that it didn't happen. The same thing is true for the NBA trade deadline, for any type of trade deadline or you know, bio market or anything at all. Just because things don't happen the way you think they should doesn't mean it's bad overall. I feel that especially here in Boston, because everyone is flaming Danny Ainge for not making moves. What moves did you want him to make? Like what moves were there actually that you could do without giving away the pieces of your core that you need to keep to get something back in return? That's a whole other problem with this team, is that they're incredibly top heavy and have no depth. You know, yeah. I mean, that's that is going to fetch you anything. It's just my opinion on the trade deadline in general is like, it has to be an exercise in expectation management. Because if you think that there's going to be all these flamethrowers out there that are going to truly dramatically shift the culture or the success ceiling of a team, you're watching the wrong sport. It's just not going to happen. I kind of feel like the best trade in recent memory for anywhere in Boston that made an immediate impact mid-season was the trade of Nomar Garciaparra in 04. Right, that led to enough pieces coming back for the Red Sox to go on a meteoric run, legendary run to the World Series, first World Series in 86 years. The fact that, but at the time when they traded Nomar, it was like an identity crisis in the city of Boston. The only reason why it's remembered fondly is because it wound up working out ultimately.
Right. In the Red Sox case, they shipped out the big name. Bigger names came to contending teams at that trade deadline, but they weren't the ones standing at the end. So, you know, you look at this trade deadline, you see a guy like an Oladipo or an Aaron Gordon or a Vucevic change addresses, or even a Boogie Cousins. Only one of those teams, and potentially none of those teams, is going to be the one who gets to say at the end, hey, we won the championship and we made the best deadline move.
Right. It's not what this is. It's just not. When was before Kawhi Leonard going to Toronto and then Toronto winning the title, when was the last time a team made an offseason acquisition that led to the ultimate prize?
A trade as opposed to free agent?
Like either a trade or any type of move. I think it doesn't happen that often.
I really think it would be Garnett, because the Heat didn't win the first year that LeBron was there, and Chris Bosh as well. So, I mean, I think it would be Garnett. Like the Lakers, when they got Powell, you know, they wound up in the finals, but they didn't win. They won the next 2 years. But that immediate return is such a rare thing. That's a great point, P.
It just doesn't happen. But the trick that everyone, the greatest trick the devil ever pulled, was convincing the world he doesn't exist, right? That's from the Usual Suspects. And the Usual Suspects in the NBA are always the guys rumored to be on the move.
Yeah.
And largely because media guys, they have their favorites of what they think should happen. People consume media in many different ways. So you just kind of wind up following headlines. And then this type of fervor builds around a guy, whether deserved or not. And if he doesn't land on a team that immediately goes to the finals or is now not a finals favorite, it's viewed as like, you know, well, they didn't do enough, or this was a bust. It's like, guys, it's just another, it's a job move. Okay. We'll see if it works. We'll just see if it works. But the expectation around it, and that's part of the fun of following it, which makes the NBA, the WWE, and I'm fine with that. It's just like you're hoping for these larger things to happen.
Yeah.
And it's great fun, but you have to leave it at that. You can't, I don't know. I don't think it's not a worthwhile exercise to assume any of these moves are going to make a true impact.
Yeah, and all the NBA GMs wind up like Vince McMahon, where all the fan base can just crap on them for not doing exactly the thing that you want, following it to the T. Right. So we look at this year's deadline and the fallout from the deadline, and like I said, I want to do six moves. We'll go back and forth until we get to six. Here's my first move, and it's the Miami Heat adding Victor Oladipo. I feel like out of all the guys who changed addresses, he's probably the most dynamic player. Vucevic, probably because he's healthy, going to the Bulls is maybe potentially the most immediate impact. But I'm kind of having trouble figuring out this Oladipo move for two reasons. For one, he's hurt. Miami Heat, right now, they have the ninth best playoff odds in the East, which would put them in that play-in scenario. But they're not necessarily riding high coming off an NBA Finals appearance last year. So it makes you wonder, additionally, like, how does a guy as talented as Victor Oladipo fit into the Miami Heat for this year? And if, you know, this year is not really what they're looking at, what's going to happen with the Heat for next year and going forward? Because the presumption would be they're going to use this leverage to re-sign Oladipo, and then they make some major moves with it. Say one of their young wings like a Harrow or a Duncan Robinson, or guys are going to be going out the door. So I just think that's a really intriguing move because the Heat have proven that they can be a contender. They're out of it this year. Oladipo might breathe some life in. He might not if he gets healthy. But I think the long game here is where the most intrigue is.
I agree. And I think most teams, I mean, look how tightly packed the East is right now.
Oh, it's crazy.
You know, it's nuts. I mean, a three-game winning streak for any of these teams moves them from the bottom half to right in the middle of, like, you know, they go for, like, the Celtics, they win five in a row, could jump from 9 to 4, I believe.
Yeah.
It's just there's plenty of time left for, like, huge moves to be made, but it's ultimately a gamble when you don't have, like, you know, your entire stack of chips riding on the roulette wheel.
Yeah.
I think the Heat are a perfect example of this because Oladipo gets to the market he ultimately wants to be in. Mm-hmm. Yes, he's a free agent at the end of this year, so he'll be looking around, but that's where he wants to be. They have his bird rights, so they have an opportunity to, you know, kind of put together a team-friendly deal that makes a player happy, being in the market he wants to be in. But ultimately, I don't think they're looking to go on a run right now. I think they're just looking – they're looking at this as like an extended audition to see if it works, and if we get into the playoffs, let's see what we can do. It's – and they're going to use this as a chance to be like, if our big three here – are going to be Bam and Jimmy and maybe Victor Oladipo, then we have moves we can make to complement those things. So it's like an audition for Depo to see if that really is the best fit for him.
Yeah.
I think a lot of teams viewed the moves they made in a similar way.
Yeah. I think if you look at, like I mentioned, the Vucevic move, I mean, that's the, like, what are the Bulls' expectations for this year? Yeah, they might make the playoffs or get into that play-in scenario, but it's definitely, again, the long game with Chicago.
Exactly. I think, like, and I'll move up for my first pick to actually beat Vooch. I think that was definitely the most surprising move made. He was a guy that I didn't think the Magic would move ultimately. So I was surprised to see that was like the first big chip to fall. Hmm. And him going to Chicago is a good chance for Chicago to try to, like, solidify what their identity is going to be. And they're getting pretty scrappy, you know? So Billy Donovan coming in as the head coach, they have a new front office who needed to make a splash. Mm-hmm. And they are, you know, trying to figure out what is going to be their core that can potentially attract free agents to want to jump in.
Right.
And I think you're starting to get somewhat of a nucleus. I think Lauri Markkanen will probably be out the door in the offseason. Mm-hmm. The free agent class this year is not super strong, so they might just be making little tweak moves to try to, like, build a team with some momentum around, like, LaVine and Vucevic and now Daniel Theis. That's a pretty compelling partial nucleus, you know? Kobe White's on the rise. They have some really fun players out there that could wind up being scrappy or being like a Midwest Sacramento Kings from 2 years ago.
Yeah, the only difference, I guess, is just the pedigree of the franchise. You know,
exactly.
You know, granted, it's been a long time since Jordan's been there, but there's always the allure of Chicago, and it's not Sacramento.
The Vooch move, I think, is a good one. That was a shot across the bow from Chicago to the rest of the league. They've been, like you said, they're like the Knicks in the sense that they're a storied franchise that's been in the NBA, close to relegation, shall we say, for the past decade or so. So I think that was a really interesting move. I'm excited to see where that goes. And that makes that team fun and scrappy as hell to watch. They're similar to Charlotte. I think when I think back on the 2021 season, it's going to be not like what was out. I was not as interested in the teams that I knew would be there in the end. I'm more interested in the teams that are fighting to get to the middle of the pack or possibly get to the play-in game.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say that too. I think my league pass habits have kind of followed a lot of that. Remember when we did that league pass draft? That feels like 2 years ago at this point.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't even remember the teams I drafted.
You had some pretty good ones, man. Denver, Utah.
I think Brooklyn was in there.
Brooklyn, I believe, was in there. I think the Clips might have been on your squad.
Yeah, I think the Clips were. So, yeah, it's I have wound up watching Utah quite a bit, and that with the Jazz, they're definitely thought of. I mean, if you look at people's power rankings right now, for some, they're the number one team in the league, but they don't feel like the number one team in the league because they're the Jazz. And, you know, they've never won an NBA championship, and we're kind of trying to figure out if they're built for that. But it's kind of fun on a night-to-night basis to watch that. Another team that I drafted, I think my number one pick was Denver, and they had a Hulkamania kind of trade deadline. They just ran wild going out there, getting Aaron Gordon, adding JaVale McGee, which is kind of a redundant move for them. But you know, brings them a veteran, I guess. Aaron Gordon, I mean, whether or not Michael Porter's your third guy, like, you got a bunch of guys now, and that just makes them deeper. That really helps their front court, their switchability on defense. He doesn't have to be like a big offensive option. He can just kind of do, you know, the athletic shit that he does out there and let Jokic and Jamal Murray pour in the points. I think it's very intriguing to see the West right now with teams like Denver and Utah up top, and a team like the Lakers really hinging on LeBron and AD's health right now. We got some new blood up there.
Remember a couple of weeks ago when we did the exercise of like who could actually be an impact player for the Celtics and what should they do? Mm-hmm. And we kind of narrowed in by process of elimination that it would make more sense to take a big swing at a guy like Karl-Anthony Towns or Kristaps Porzingis.
Yes.
The argument that I made for Porzingis was that you'd be able to, the element he would add to the Celtics does not fundamentally change what makes them good right now. It's just an added bonus on top when he's contributing at the highest level. Mm-hmm. I still believe in that recipe, and how it's going to play out is exactly in Denver for the things that you just said. They're not bringing in Aaron Gordon to really rely on him to do everything. So as long as he's just contributing on a night in, night out basis, great, because they traded him for pieces they were not relying on at all right now. Right.
Yeah.
But on the nights where he is an offensive dynamo or is going off from three, can, you know, and can make it to the bucket and can also play a little defense, that's going to be the room that he provides to let them elevate. Like, that's the recipe for success. I don't know what that's going to do for them. It's going to be tough for them. I don't know if Denver is going to make it to the NBA Finals, but without Aaron Gordon last year, they made it to the Western Conference Finals.
Yeah.
You know? And I think that, so they're, I think it was a good pickup, another good audition for Aaron Gordon out there, and just to allow him to get a little bit of, develop the rest of his game. And to see what that ultimately looks like, to see if Kevin O'Connor and his praise of Aaron Gordon has been warranted for the past 7 years. So I'm excited to see that. I think it was a pretty low bar he's not going to take much for him to jump over. It's to have that look successful. I'm excited to see it. I've always been wanting to see it unlocked Aaron Gordon, and this might be the only chance we get.
Well, as a former, you know, slam dunk contest runner up, I don't think it would be very difficult to jump over said bar.
Yeah.
you mentioned earlier in our conversation, you know, like the Celtics having the assets to pry away some of these guys. And I look at like the Gordon deal and I just go, huh, you know, a first, a prospect, and you know, Gary Harris, who does some things for Denver, but I think pretty much everybody universally agrees he's probably making a little too much money for what he actually does. It's like the Celtics couldn't have done something like that and brought a guy like Aaron Gordon in.
It's a good point and a good thought exercise for that. But I think you kind of have to give Danny Ainge the benefit of the doubt, which is something I probably do way too much. But
probably.
To give Danny Ainge the benefit of the doubt, we don't know if that's what the Magic was asking for, like from everybody.
Or just or what they got.
It's just what they got from Denver, right?
Yeah.
Because they could have been talking to Danny and they were like, we need Marcus Smart. We need Neesmith. We need Peyton Pritchard. And it's yours. And they were, and Danny might have been like, that's too much. Like that takes away too much of what we need to get something back, which may not be what we truly want.
Yeah. They're just on a different footing from Denver in general. Yeah. And yeah, those parts don't equal out to what the Nuggets, you know, ultimately gave up. It's every team is going to have different things that they can bring to the table.
So, and different things that you ask for, right? I mean, like if you have to look at like a trade is a transaction between two different parties, and depending on who the parties are, the elements are going to change. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's as simple as like, well, it was a trade piece and an asset and a veteran with a decent contract. That's pretty easy for any team to do. So why didn't the Lakers do that?
Yeah.
Why didn't the Clips do that? It's because they were probably asking for different things from different parties. So it just kind of winds up being, it's a bummer for the Seas because they were heavily involved with all these pieces. I mean, I think they were linked to pretty much everyone who got moved at some point.
Yeah.
And it just wound up being like, well, what you want, what, you know, you have Boston, what we want from you is Jaylen Brown or Jason Tatum or Marcus Smart. Or whatever, it's going to be one of those three guys. Mm-hmm. And if the Celtics were to trade them, they're not going to get back anything nearly as impactful. So right. Why would you trade them at all? You know?
Yeah, it's a fair question. Do we want to? Do we want to do the Fournier deal as one to look over here?
Like,
I'm not.
Yeah,
I'm guess, not. A,
yeah, no, no. I'll.
I'm not
I'll
forcing run. This one upon you. I'll let you no, have no, another gonna, selection, but.
I'm going to burn that one because the last pick I'm going to make is it's more of a group one. So let's talk Fournier. I think that's why I'm intrigued by this is because similar to maybe this is a way to unlock Aaron Gordon in Denver. Maybe this is a way to unlock Evan Fournier in Boston or really kind of allow him to do what he's done best, but in a way where he's not expected to carry so much of the offensive load.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he's going to get the chance to do what he did in Orlando in Boston. So I'm curious to see if he's going to be able to add that as an extra layer of frosting on top here and just, you know, as opposed to being like one of the premier offensive threats that team had.
Yeah. The early returns haven't been all that good for Fournier. He's got 6 points across two games. He was 0-for-10 in the first game. I mean, you know, bad games happen. That sort of stuff could have happened in a game with the Magic, and he needs to find his footing with this particular team. I've always admired his game from afar. I love his fit with this second unit. He has in both games played over 30 minutes, and I think that would be great for him to play over 30 minutes. But like you said, he's not going to be looked to as a first option pretty much any time he's on the court. And even if he's on the floor with the bench unit, he's going to have like a Jaylen or Jason Tatum out there with him at the same time. But if he can work with them, it just really helps that lack of depth that you were describing, where it's, you know, you got your top guys, the elite, and then you got this big gap and you've got all these jabronis, young unproven guys and rotational dreck that populate the end of the Celtics bench. So Fournier helps fill in, give you the nice creamy center on the ding dong. That's a terrible analogy, but
wow. That might be the episode title. The nice creamy center of the ding dong. Evan Fournier. Yeah, man. I mean, I think that obviously, this Celtics season has been truly, truly a bummer. You know, as we record, they're sitting at 23-25. I think they just had two, not heartbreaking, but definitely like deep sigh losses to the Pelicans and the Mavericks.
Yeah.
So frustrating. And they just.
And they're not unusual given what we've seen over the course of the year. It's just some nights it's an effort thing. Some nights it's an execution thing. It's.
They're playing like a team that needs a vacation.
Yeah, they are. Like, you know, that can't be an excuse this year. I mean, everyone is tired. Everyone is dealing with this heavy workload. But it seems to be weighing on the Celtics a lot more, potentially because, like we said, with that lack of depth, the guys at the top are just shouldering so much of a load.
Right.
So I thought Fournier would potentially help. I mean, I guess that remains to be seen. We've got, what, about 20, maybe 22 games left in the season at this point. So better happen fast.
Yeah. You know, I mean, I think it's just weird, man. It's truly strange. But, you know, and we'll see. I mean, the heyday Celtics in the first decade of the 2000s. Mm-hmm. Remember they had that really hot start. This is one of the Sheed years, super duper hot start. And then went 500 in the second half of the year.
Yep.
Who knows? I mean, sometimes all you have to do is make it into the playoffs. You know?
Yeah. I mean, their whole thing was they were going to flip the switch. That was the talk that, you know, it was a veteran team and they were just going to flip the switch because they'd been there before. Flipping the switch is a little bit tougher when you got young guys leading the charge who haven't had to flip the switch before. So
Romeo Langford, I need you to flip the switch.
I need you to play, Romeo. Yeah. I need you on the floor.
Right. I know Scalabrini is a big fan of his, and he seems to have a lot of fans in the organization. And
he's got a lot of tools. I'm looking forward to seeing it. Yeah, you know? At some time. Until then, he's like the Stojko Vrankovic or the Dino Raja, just a guy who's tucked away in mothballs, and you really want to see him, but you can't.
Yeah.
Talking about him like he's from Eastern Europe. We got two more of these here. We got two more, so I gotta be selective. I think the Boogie Cousins to the Clippers move, which is not a trade, 10-day contract at this point, is huge. I think the Clippers, you know, maybe the one weakness with that team, well, they added playoff Rondo for one.
Mm-hmm.
So they get Lou Williams out of there, who has had a nice career, but was a weakness for them last year in the playoffs. And clearly they wanted something different out of their reserve guard. So they get Rondo, but they add Boogie Cousins, who looked really good at times in Houston this season. You know, looked healthy, looked like he was ready to do all manner of boogie things. And with the Clippers in their front court, having health issues with Serge Ibaka right now, I guess his back is messed up. Zubats has been okay, but throw Boogie in there, and that's just, you know, more top-end talent. And we talked about Denver and Utah, but Clippers, I think, right in that picture out west as well.
Totally agree. And for my last pick here, so I had mentioned, like, this is kind of more of a collective move.
Yeah.
And my last pick here is moves for leadership. Like, so little, like, adding leadership to your club for stability.
Yeah.
Playoff Rondo falls into that for sure. I think in it reuniting potentially him and Boogie will be really good. That was a good fit in Sacramento and as well as in New Orleans.
Yeah, that's right. They've had a lot of success together.
Yeah. I think Rondo is a guy that can just really get people on the same page. You know, I think it was Jackie McMullen on a Bill Simmons podcast recently talking about how she thinks Rondo will be a great coach in the future. And I think I tend to agree. I think he will, he just has a way of unlocking the game for certain people and getting them all to buy in and being on the same page. It's really kind of the last vestige of that 2008 team.
Yeah.
And how that's manifested here in 2021. And I'm hoping that that's the case. And if Rondo is the edge that the Clippers need to start, you know, kind of slicing through the West, great. I'm all for it. Love Rondo, especially playoff Rondo. The other part of that move that I want, or the other good example there, I think is going to be JJ Redick in Dallas. I think he's going to add some stability to that roster and just a professional basketball player. Adding that to the roster is just another steady hand to play with Porzingis and with Luka. He's been injured. He's working through an injury right now. You know, But I think that like it just that a move like that just makes sense, I think, for the type of basketball that they're trying to, the basketball culture that Dallas is trying to build. Mm. And it also keeps Luka at the tip of the spear. Right. This is just another guy who can help create offense, can draw a couple shooters to open up the floor a little bit. And I have high hopes for a move like that. Plus, it's another older guard who just is finding a way to be useful on the floor. And I think that's always interesting, not because of what they do, but because of what their presence allows others to do.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I know you're always going to stand for Dallas. You like what they got going down there, and anything that could, to use your term, unlock the full capabilities of Luka and his crew down there would probably be appreciated. I guess, you know, if you're looking at like an honorable mention for that sort of category, I think George Hill going to Philly. There's another older guard who kind of does his thing, and everybody else is going to do stuff around him, but he's been through the rigors. Philly, you know, hasn't had a lot of playoff success, and there's a guy who has. So, you know, that's a move as well. But
another guy, I mean, not that I would call this guy a leader or even really a vet, but rumor is that Austin Rivers might be signing with the Bucks.
Yeah.
And same deal. It's just another guy who's, I mean, Austin had a pretty good run in the first part of the season in New York, just because it's a guy who's been around the block and has a structure that he plays in. And that type of stability is always helpful. Now, granted, once Derrick Rose came over to the Knicks, that pretty much was the good night for Austin Rivers there. And now that he's out on the buyout market, him going to the Bucks or really anywhere, especially to a contender, it just is another way to add stability and pretty bankable hoops in a limited capacity to unlock what makes the team great. In the Bucks case, it's Porzingis, Middleton, and Drew Holiday. You know, so it's I think that could be another interesting move. Again, none of these ones are blockbusters. It's just fortifying what makes these teams good. And that's really the type of move that typically we'll see around a deadline or trade deadline like this. And we'll see what kind of shakes out.
Bankable hoops. That's it, man. We're going to sit back on our couches when we have the opportunity and our dogs aren't throwing up or our kids aren't screaming to watch some of these teams and see the fallout of what happened across the league with the deadline and still is happening with more moves, minor moves potentially to be made. For the Over 30 League, I'm Sean Silver. He's Patrick O'Connor, and I look forward to chopping it up with you again sometime soon, my friend.
You got it. My schedule is about to open up, so let's go.
Good luck to you, man.